before I go to Darren Kelly with JobSpot, I just want to announce that the winner of the Kilfenora Cayley Band tickets for Leisureland on the 22nd of March is Maura Feeney. So congratulations to you, Maura, on winning those tickets. If you want to get your own tickets to go see them, you can do so on ticketmaster.ie. Now, though, Darren Kelly has JobSpot. What have you got today, Darren?
Got three in total, John. We're going to start with SolGrid, a solar PV company in Loughrea, are looking for solar PV installers, an apprentice electrician, lead administrator and marketing executive. CVs to HR at solgrid.ie. Visit solgrid.ie/jobs. I just spelled that. That's SolGrid. Or call 091-335-335 for more information. Henley Forklift are hiring agri-mechanics or construction plant fitters for Galway and surrounding counties. Experience necessary. Email CV to careers@henley.ie. And finally, ProVirum, a startup medical device company, is looking to hire a permanent manufacturing technician. Apply with your CV to HR at ProVirum Medical, that's ProVirumMedical.com, for more information. And if you need any phone numbers or email addresses, please call our reception on 091-770-077. Search hashtag Galway Jobs on social media or go to galwaybfm.ie/jobspot.
And a very good morning to you. Welcome into today's programme. I'd like to say I'm joined in studio by our very own Valerie Hughes for Galway Greats. Valerie, good morning.
Good morning to you.
Thanks for joining us today. Valerie, you're well known to our listeners here on Galway Bay FM, but I want you to take me back to your childhood and tell us a bit about where you're from and where you grew up.
Oh, well, I grew up in Makhni in Ballinasloe, which is located just close to Garbally College. And there was four lads and four lassies. I'm the second eldest in the family. All are hale and hearty, thank God. Attended the Mercy Convent in Ballinasloe. And spent all my childhood there, right up until Leaving Cert.
And tell me about your parents. I know they both were in the same line of work, and that's how they met. How did they meet?
Yeah, they were both psychiatric nurses. So they both worked in St. Bridget's Hospital in Ballinasloe. My mother was a nurse there until I think she probably started a family. And then obviously with all of us, there was no time for it. She was doing enough work at home. And my dad worked there right up until retirement. I actually remember him vividly. He used to leave it for work at 7 in the morning, and he used to cycle down to all weathers, down to St. Bridget's and back up again. Wouldn't get finished until 7 in the evening. Long days. And then off. Maybe he used to work every second day or something like that. And he used to do, on his part-time, he used to do reupholstery as a hobby initially, but he was so good at it. All the neighbours, everybody used to come to him anytime they had a hole in a couch or needed a leg put on a chair or whatever. He was brilliant at that. Great with his hands.
And would you say you're more like your mother or father in terms of personality?
I think, do you know, it's hard. I would have always said I look like my dad, aside, but as I get older, I can see an awful lot of my mother in me.
And they were well known to people in the Ballinasloe area.
Yes, they would. I mean, everyone knew them. Everyone knew my dad, as they used to always say. He's Michael Hughes, the gentleman. There was one word everyone called him. He was an absolute gentleman, and he was. He was a quiet spoken man, and just a very good person and very good neighbour. And my mother was a wonderful mother, and she only went out to start to work after she had us all raised. Wow. And she only went out because I suppose she missed out on so much life raising 8 of us, and she loved it. And she loved all the gossip. And she worked in Square D. She loved just being part of the group there and that. You could see her. She came alive. Mm. Unfortunately, she didn't live very long after that. But oh my God, she made the most of it when she was there.
And let's stay with your childhood, because I know there was a lot of music and dancing in your house when you were young.
Yeah, because both of them came from very large families. My mother was from Top McConnell, Castle Sampson, Top McConnell, and my dad was from Mount Bellew. And they used to have family gatherings, and they used to come up to our house, and oh, I always remember it. Everyone would gather in the sitting room, and there'd be the ham sandwiches and the salad and all the cakes and everything that would come out. But afterwards, then the sing-song would start. And it was always country music. And I still often wondered how I knew songs. And it was just from memory, hearing them all singing it on that. It was very much part of it. And they were very, very involved in cultus. And they loved the traditional music and Irish dancing. And my sisters performed, Irish dancing. And even my younger brother, I think, did a little bit of Irish dancing as well. So they were very involved with that and loved it. Mm. Mm.
And then the other side of the house was in Mount Bellew.
Yes. Yes, my grandmother lived down in Mount Bellew, Longford Hill, and my cousins are down there still, the Hugheses. And I spent an awful lot of my holidays when I was a child. We used to go down there for the summer holidays, and I loved that house. Oh, my God. Mm. And going forward, then it was when I was looking for a house, I just couldn't get it out of my head. Mm. That was the type of house I wanted to live in, and I do now.
Mm-hmm. And another passion you had when you were younger, and I think it was an obsession for you and your sisters, was gymnastics. Was there much gymnastics in Ballinasloe back in those days?
There wasn't really. I suppose you had your gym class, but we used to do a little bit. There was mats and you did your tumbling and the benches and all of that, but nothing to the extent that we were obsessive about our gymnastics. And we used to watch it diligently in the Olympics and that. The days of anyone that would remember back to Olga Corbett, she was a tiny little thing, 4 foot something, and she was amazing. And then Nadia Comaneci, she came along and she was the one that got all the perfect tens, and still remember it. We got all the books and everything, used to go over them. We didn't have the internet then, so that was your way of seeing what was going on. Absolutely loved it. Loved it. Mm.
Your first piece of music, Valerie, David Bowie's Sorrow. Just talk me through why you've linked that to this part of your life.
I just loved David Bowie growing up. There was, a handful of artists that we used to listen to all the time. And that song always resonated with me right back up until I did my Leaving Cert. It just meant an awful lot to me, and it still does. And every time I hear it, it just brings me right back to the final days of school there in the Mercy in Ballinasloe, and all my friends and all the memories that go with it. Love this song.
And a very good morning to you. Welcome back into today's programme. Valerie Hughes stays with me for Galway Greats. Valerie, you left Ballinasloe and you went to London for a year.
Yes, I went to, I think I actually went to Dublin first, and from there on then I went to London. And I suppose I was just trying to experience as much as I could at that age, and went with some friends. And I did a bookkeeping accountancy course over there. Probably, I don't know if I had an interest in bookkeeper. I just had to get a job, and I had my mother on the phone saying, what are you doing? You have to make a living, and you have to do something. So I said, okay, I'll do that. So I did that. And I finished the course over there, and I actually worked for an accountancy company over there, and then came back.
Mm. What was life over there?
We had an absolute ball. We had an absolute ball. I mean, I wasn't there for the bookkeeping or accountancy, I can assure you. But anyway, we had great fun. And it was an experience. It was so far. I suppose after being raised in a small town like Ballinasloe and a large family and, we hadn't gone anywhere or done anything, and it was a whole new world for me. So I lived it. I'll just say that. We lived it when we were over there.
What drew you back to Galway?
I always loved Galway. Always loved Galway, and I suppose all my friends were there as well, and it was close to home because we were quite close as a family as well. And so I moved back, and I can't even remember what my first job was when I came back from London, but I worked for a number of companies around Galway as in admin and secretarial work and bookkeeping work and that, finally up until I think around 93, maybe 94, I worked for Henry Greeley. A lot of people will know Henry Greeley. Henry was a great boss, and we worked for him in the Oasis. That was a nightclub in Saltail, and they also had another nightclub called, or another pub called The Castle, and they had The Emerald down in Dunmore.
Wow.
So I worked for the three of there, and I used to do the office work, and I did the stock taking, and that was a wonderful job, wonderful job.
Salthill was booming in those days.
Absolutely flying it. Honest, you know, the doors would open, the queue would be the whole way down the road to get in. It was amazing. And often I'd get out of there at 4 o'clock in the morning and be back in for work at 9. Oh, the days. Those were the days.
Wow.
Yeah.
And people listening to this might think that that's how the natural progression into radio happened. You go from a nightclub scene into it, but it wasn't so for you. Just talk to us about how you got involved here in Galway Bay FM.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, a lot of people in the business know. I don't know if many people out there do know, but I met a radio presenter here. He was, I think he was doing DJ there in the Oasis at the time, John Richards.
Yes.
So I met John and I started to go out with John, and he had an, at that time, I think he was doing a nighttime show, and I used to come in and answer the phones for him just to help him out because he didn't have anyone on the phones at night. And it started from there. And then I remember they asked, the bosses here asked, were looking for me to do a bit of reception work for filling in on that. So that's how it started. And then the guy that was doing production at the time, Sean, asked me to do some voiceover work. And he seemed to like my voice and suggested, you know, that I maybe look into doing maybe something on radio. So it actually went from there, because they were actually doing a bit of a reshuffle in the programming, and they had a slot on a Saturday morning that was very quiet. There wasn't really much happening at that time. And they asked me, would I be interested? So I was thinking, what would I do? Because I wouldn't have considered myself a radio person, and I didn't think I had a radio voice. And I just kept going back to country music. So I know Tom Gilmore was obviously doing Country Roads at the time, and he used to do it during the week. So I thought, you know, maybe I'll do a country show. So what I did was I decided to do a hospital request show. And so my dad built me some hospital request boxes, and I put them in all the hospitals around Galway. And every Friday night I'd go over and collect them, and they would be jam-packed with requests. And so the show was on Saturday mornings, and that was actually the start. So it started off as the hospital request show, and it was huge, absolutely huge.
A lot of work going into that, and a lot of driving around. You're like postman, Valerie.
Yeah. Yeah, there was, yeah. But I loved it. I loved it, and there was such a buzz about it. And people, the country music people are just amazing. And they're so loyal, and they're so enthusiastic about country music. And it was just, I just got completely immersed in it. Loved it, absolutely loved it.
I was actually at one or two dances myself, and it's a big culture shock for anyone who's not from it.
Yes. Yes, yes. But you know what? A lot of people forget there's a lot of young people are really into it now. Huge. The jiving and dancing is absolutely huge at the moment. So it's wonderful to see, you know, and they're great. The artists themselves are amazing.
Definitely. In terms of your career in radio, you said you didn't really see that pathway before your life, but you've enjoyed it since you have got into it.
Yes, absolutely. You know, I mean, it's obviously now it's moved on since then, and now with social media, and, you know, we don't see the volume of phone calls and texts anymore. It's all WhatsApps now. And even there isn't even, I think, there used to be, as I said, so many requests and that coming in. People now seem to just like to listen to the music and that. But when I go out to any of the, I do a lot of MCs for concerts and shows and that, and the feedback is, the volume is there. People still absolutely love it. Now we call it the wagon wheel. So, and the times have changed. Obviously, I do a different slot now. It's 11 to 1 on a Saturday. And I also do a Sunday 11 to 1 now, which is going very well.
Are you enjoying that? And what about melody as well? Talk to me about that, because you've a mixture of genres that you can cover.
Yes, I always, well, I suppose I was reared with the music from the 70s and 80s, and I always loved that music. And so I decided, you know, when they asked me to do a different slot, and they were bandying around what kind of music to go with, it had to be 70s and 80s for me. And so it's every Tuesday, Wednesday and Thursday between 8 and 10, and I really, really enjoy it. Really enjoy it.
Now, another big part of your life during this time, the midsection of your life, Valerie, Dogs.
Yes.
Talk to me.
Yeah. Anyone that knows me, I mean, it's a passion, an absolute passion with me. Back in 1998, I used to have, before I actually got into Bernese Mountain Dogs, I had a black Labrador called Chalky. And then when Chalky passed away, I bought my first Bernese Mountain Dog back in 1998. And that was an introduction to the breed, and I became obsessed, absolutely obsessed with them.
Where was the first Bernese Mountain Dog you saw that inspired that?
I was, believe it or not, I was out in Silver Strand with Chalky. We used to take walks up out there all the time, and a camper van pulled up, and this lady got out with three absolutely magnificent Bernese Mountain Dogs. In actual fact, I found out afterwards that one of those dogs was the top winning dog in Bernese in the UK.
Wow.
About, oh, I just fell madly in love. And I said, I just started to research after that, and I swore, this is going to be my first dog. So, and hence it was, yes.
But you got very involved in it.
Yeah, after my first dog, Murphy, I decided to get a female, and I decided I'm going to try this showing lark. So I did that, and she came from the top breeders in Ireland at the time, and I had great fun with her and showed her a lot. But what actually happened was I had her a couple of years, and I decided I'd breed her for a litter. So I went back, believe it or not, to the lady that I actually saw out on Silver Strand, and I used one of her dogs. He sired the litter, and it turned out to be a really, really good litter and a really successful litter. And I kept one myself, and she went on to win a Crofts in 2010, which was a pretty amazing feat and an amazing experience.
What's that like? What's that experience like over there? It looks magnificent on the TV. Does it live up to the
hype?
Oh,
it's phenomenal. And it's hard to describe unless you're actually into dogs, you know. It is amazing. There was 230-something Bernese, I think, that year. And to actually be picked out from a small kennel, a very first litter in Ireland, and to win was just phenomenal. Mm. Absolutely phenomenal. And it's a big, big, big thing now. It's actually on this weekend, and there's a huge interest. It's like the Cheltenham of dog showing, you know, the biggest dog show in the world, Crofts. So to actually win there is incredible.
And you mentioned you breed Bernese Mountain Dogs as well, and you supplied a very famous man of Galway and son of Galway, Michael D. Higgins, with his very first Bernese.
His first one in the Auris. A lot of people don't realise that Michael D. Higgins actually used to breed Bernese Mountain Dogs and always had one. And you always remember him driving around Galway City, and he'd always have a dog sitting beside him in the front seat. It was just fantastic, and loved Bernese. And I actually, one of my Bernese that I got, the second male I got, was from his lines. But I remember meeting him before he actually was elected as president, and he told me, he said, Valerie, I will have two Bernese if I get into the Auris. There'll be two Bernese in the Auris. And he was true to his word. So he came looking, and he wanted a rescue. And it just so happened that I had one that the family that owned it were moving to Dubai, and it was too hot for a Bernese. So she came back to me, and so I drove up there and delivered the dog to him, Shadow. So Shadow was the first Bernese in the Auris.
And you drove straight in the front door.
I'm still mortified when I think about it. Yeah, drove the van up, didn't realise I was supposed to pull around the back with the help, and I pulled right up. I have photographs to prove it. Parked right outside the front door of the Auris. Yeah, and we had a great day up there with them, and they were wonderful. They were wonderful, but he was besotted from the start.
Wow. Mm. I think now is a good time for us to get our second piece of music, Valerie, and you might just talk me through this one.
Yes, so I decided to go with something a little bit more upbeat. By the way, might I just say that I decided not to play any country songs or select any country songs because of, look at, there's so many I love and I don't want to step on anyone's toes. So I just said, no, I'll leave the Irish country out of it. And what I picked was Hot Chocolate. Always loved Hot Chocolate, and great memories of dancing to this and the fun we had around that, I suppose, from teenage on to into the 80s, towards the early 90s. Hot Chocolate, and the song I picked was Girl Crazy, and I think it's a great song.
If she can dance, I'll teach her to dance in every way. And if by chance she's new to romance, I'll teach her to make love night and day. 'Cause I'm girl crazy, crazy. I'm girl crazy.
And a very good morning to you. Welcome back into today's programme. Valerie Hughes stays with me now for Galway Greats. And Valerie, we're going to move into the next section of your life. But before we go to your side of things, I want to just get a little bit of context as well, because your mother actually passed away from cancer.
Yes, she was diagnosed. She actually got kidney failure, and we didn't know why, and she was transferred up to Beaumont Hospital in Dublin, and then she was on dialysis, and it wasn't until she came back to Galway that they told us that she had multiple myeloma. And unfortunately, she was, I think she was diagnosed with multiple myeloma around January 2006, and she passed away in July. She was only 68 years old. So my family, the girls, I suppose especially, have always been conscious of that. Mm. And there's been a lot of cancer in both sides of our family. And so we, I suppose as we got a bit older, we were diligent about health testing. So once a year, you get your bloods done and everything. And I had my bloods done. And to make a long story short, my doctor was incredible. Absolutely incredible. And he realised, Dr. Inda Haran down there in the Grove Medical Centre in Tuam was fantastic. And he literally was on the ball and he knew there was something wrong. And he straight away sent me in to have a scan done. And obviously I had a very large tumour, which I was not aware of, 17 by 21 centimetres in my abdomen. And he, so then it was a flurry, really. There was MRIs and there was bloods and everything done. And on the 6th of March last year, I went in for major surgery. So I had a major hysterectomy. I had everything removed, really, that they could remove. They took my appendix, they took my omentum, they took literally, they took the tumour, and thankfully they took the tumour intact. They did find two other spots of cancer cells on my omentum, and they removed that with clean margins. And then in May I started chemotherapy. So it's not pleasant. Anyone that goes through it, you know, it's not pleasant. But they, you know, you just have to do it because it does the job. Mm-hmm. It, you know, you just, it absolutely did the job. So I had six sessions of chemo. So you'd have 1 week where you felt okay. With the chemo itself, is no problem. It doesn't cause any problems. And for about 3 or 4 days after, then you start to feel bad. And that can go on for a few days. By the third week, you're feeling absolutely perfect again. And then it starts all over again. So it was every 3 weeks for six sessions. And I had the last one on the 25th of August last year. And luckily for me, I got the all clear. So everything is, so far, fingers crossed, everything is good. But it was ovarian cancer, and it's high-grade serous ovarian cancer. And unfortunately, it does tend to come back, so 80% of the cases recur. So my attitude is, get out there, live your life, enjoy it while you can, because you don't know what's around the corner.
Mm. And you are living life to the fullest. You're just back from Lanzarote, and I believe another trip is planned in the summer.
I just said, I spent so much time with the dogs and all of that. I said, it's time to look after me now. So, I went for 5 days with a friend, and we, just for a break, not even for the sun, just as well, the sun only shone one day. But anyway, it's just a case of get out there, live life, do all the things you want to do, because I suppose none of us know how much time we have. So my plan is to enjoy every day that I have and make the most of it.
Did it take you back to your mother's illness and diagnosis when you...
Yes. Because I remember we used to go to all her hospital appointments and being there with her. And it's scary. It's absolutely scary for anyone out there, because no one really knows what's involved unless you've been through it. And I just have to say, my medical team, Dr. Michael O'Leary and Dr. Michael McCarthy, were incredible. And the team around them, just fantastic. And I have to say a huge thank you to all the nursing staff over there in oncology in UHG, are incredible. How they work there is beyond me. It is absolutely crazy in there. You know, it's such a small space and they're so, so busy, and they're always in good form, and they're always so pleasant and so kind, and oh, it was amazing.
And you're living in Milltown now. Just talk us through that. We gave a little bit of the background earlier on, but talk us through that move to Milltown.
Yeah, because I always love my granny's house down in Longford Hill in Mount Bellew. I just always loved old houses. And I remember saying to Etna Monaghan, that she used to work here on the radio station in traffic, and I said to her, oh my God, I'd love to live in a house like that. And she sent me a photograph, and she said, this house is for sale down in Milltown. And of course I went down and I saw it and I fell madly in love. And it's a beautiful area. I'm just like maybe about a mile from the village of Milltown, and Milltown is a beautiful village. And I'm looking out on the hills and sure, it's perfect. It's out on the fields ahead of me down to the river, and ideal for the dogs, and it just worked out.
Mm.
Love it, love it.
And I know it's a personal question, but any regrets?
Yeah, people often wonder, you know, why I never got married or I never had children or anything like that. I don't regret not having children, and some people say the dogs are my children. There are, I suppose, I regret that I didn't spend more time on me and doing things for me and getting out and, I suppose, making an effort to meet somebody. I think I just got so immersed in the dogs that the years just flew. I've been involved with them since, as I said, 1998, and the years passed me by and I didn't really give it a chance. Mm. So now that I'm 61 now, and I'm thinking it would be nice to share, to have someone to share, you know, a life with, and weekends away or dinners out or things like that. But look, I'm fortunate. I have a wonderful family and a very close relationship with them, and they've all been absolutely fantastic, and I've some great friends too. Mm. So I can't quibble. But if there was any regrets, it would be that.
But you are very personable, so it wouldn't be that difficult if you did put yourself out there, or do you have any ambition to? Should we put the call out here live on radio?
Do you know what? It's I suppose there's a part of me saying, you know, is it fair to somebody because now that I've had cancer and there's a good chance it'll come back, you know, it's very difficult to meet somebody when you have that hanging over you, you know, because you don't know how long you have. I don't know, none of us know how long we have, but I know for sure that, you know, it will probably come back. And now I know there's people out there that say, oh, they've lived for 10 years or more with ovarian cancer, but it's unusual. So I don't know. We'll see. We'll see. If it's meant to happen, it'll happen.
And I suppose the right person will accept that, and they'll... Mm.
And they have to love dogs. On the couch. On the bed. Hair everywhere. It's all part of loving dogs, I think, yeah. And country music. They gotta love country music
as well.
Yeah. A lot to ask, isn't it?
it's a tall order. Does that dwell on your mind, that the ovarian cancer, and you mentioned there that the it's unlikely... that length of time?
Me living, is it?
Mortality, yeah.
No, because I'm blessed. I'm absolutely blessed. And I think it's one of the things that got me through the last year is that I'm an optimist. Mm. And I will always look on the positive side, and I don't worry about it. I learned a long time ago not to worry about things and not to dwell on them until they're actually happening. So no. It is. It is what it is. So I'll enjoy it as long as I have it.
So what's on the bucket list now for the next year or two?
Well, I'd love to go away a little bit more and see a little bit more of the world. I mean, I've never been to New York, and I've never been to Boston. I've been to lots of places. I've been, you know, obviously I've been to Chicago, and I've been to Los Angeles, and I've been to, you know, loads of countries. But there's a lot of things I'd like to do. And also, I suppose, spend more time on me. You know, just time out to relax and enjoy and take it easy. And
how do you do that? What's your escape? The dogs?
Well, no, because that's the work, you know, unfortunately. That's one of the reasons I don't get away as much as I like to, because who's going to take on 5 Bernese Mountain Dogs, which is what I have at the moment?
Not me.
Yeah, exactly, you know. So I think, just to find time to just for me and friends and family and go away and do all the things that we should have done and hopefully still have time to do.
Brilliant. To wrap it up, Valerie, your last song, a nice piece, Andy Williams' Love Story.
Oh, yes. Where do I begin? The theme from Love Story. I absolutely love this song from 1971. And do you know something, John? I play it fairly regularly on Melodies, and every time I do, people say, oh my God, the hair stood on the back of my neck. It just brings me right back. But where do I begin? Well, for me, I'm beginning all over again, haven't I? I feel like I've got a second lease of life. And this is a beautiful song from, as I said, Andy Williams.
And what memories or what emotions did it stir up in you, this song?
I suppose it makes me run through all of my life and all the things I've done. And it just makes me hope that I can keep going for another while and have an awful lot more memories in the coming years. Please, God.
Oh, no doubt you will. No doubt you will. Valerie Hughes, you are a Galway great, and thank you for joining us on Galway Bay FM.
Thank you so much, John. Really appreciate you asking me.
She fills my heart.
And thanks indeed to Valerie Hughes for joining me on Galway Greats, and thank her for being so candid and honest as well, and such a ray of optimism as well. The comment lines are absolutely hopping after the interview. John, you are interviewing some of Galway Greats, which is brilliant, to involve the well-known greats in our locality. Valerie Hughes is definitely a Galway Great and is absolutely a wonderful human being in many, many ways. Also, what an absolute lady and a queen of radio. Valerie, long may you reign, from an avid listener. This listener says, Valerie said earlier that she didn't think she'd have a voice for radio. I can't imagine anyone else narrating my weekends growing up. Another listener says, what a brilliant interview with Valerie. Such an honest, down-to-earth, wonderful lady and so talented. Love her shows. Best wishes to a lovely lady. And this listener says, Valerie, you are such a beautiful person. They keep coming in as well. Now, for one Ballinasloe low grade to another, Darren Kelly joins me in the studio for the sports review. Darren, good morning.
Good morning, John. I don't really think you can put me in the same level there as Valerie. An absolutely beautiful interview. She spoke so candidly, as you said, and I'd echo the sentiments of all those listeners there as well. Certainly a Galway great, and I'm delighted that you had her on the programme.
Something that wasn't great was all the red cards that the Galway hurlers got.
Yeah, that's a good way of leading into it too as well. Galway did beat Dublin 123-115 in the National Hurling League yesterday, enough to secure their place in Division 1 of the New Look 7-team league in 2025, and now puts them with a shot of making this year's semi-finals when they take on Limerick next Saturday in that big doubleheader in Pearse Stadium. But they will be doing it, John, without their current captain, Conor Whelan, and their previous captain, Dahi Burke. I was in Pearse Stadium yesterday. Look, John, we need more than 10 minutes to go talk about all that, but it wasn't a dirty game by any stretch of the imagination. I think the frustration built on both sides with the refereeing. Every major decision, as the lads said in commentary too, seemed to be turning into a massive dialogue, slowing down the momentum. Yellow cards were being handed out much too easily than many people would like. Jack Grealish got one early in the second half. Now, Fintan Burke had a black card that led to the Dublin penalty earlier. Nobody will complain too much about that, but it built on. Then you come down to the ends and the two red cards. Now, even though I was there, I didn't see the Conor Whelan one clearly. I don't know if you saw anything or not. I haven't seen it myself, but
I saw clips. Didn't seem to be much in it.
Yeah, so, you know, that was a feeling of a lot too. And even Henry Shefflin, who we'll hear from in a moment there now, acknowledged that there as well. With Dahi Burke, look, Dahi recklessly within late in the challenge afterwards. I still don't think it was a red card offence. I think he was coming in for the shoulder, but sometimes you're probably just better off when the game is won, pulling back on that. Either way, Johnny Murphy, the Limerick official, and there's been a lot of people talking about a Limerick man refereeing a game that affects Limerick next week. But then again, our own Liam Gordon from Galway was refereeing Limerick and Tipperary on Saturday night just to qualify that. Maybe it's something the GAA need to look at. But like 11 yellow cards, 4 red cards in the game. Like, nobody who listens on the radio or is at the match could agree with all that. But anyway, that's just my thoughts on it. Here's Henry Shefflin's immediate thoughts on the red cards when he spoke to our own Al Canavan.
I saw Dahi's one and I thought he was a little bit late, but I thought it was more shoulder to shoulder, so that one was probably, I'm not quite sure, I need to see it back. I didn't see the Conor Whelan one, but what I will say is that I saw the first, I don't know what the minute did the Conor Whelan get sent off in?
About 47, 48 minutes, but prior to that there was a lot of high balls going in, and he was under a bit of pressure with guys around him and pulling and dragging him all throughout the day.
But he's pulled and dragged. Yeah. Conor Whelan is an abrasive player, he's a top player. Does he get the protection he required? Probably not. And then, I don't know what happened. I didn't see the incident, but like, what happened for the first 45, 50 minutes? Where is the protection for the forward? There's no, like, the referees are here to help the game. And, you know, we're going to be talking about the referee today. That's the best of referees we don't talk about. And unfortunately, that is not the case today.
And for both sides.
Yeah, and you can tell there, John, too, Henry was, certainly wasn't happy either. No. And tried to, he'd been a forward himself. And I have to say one thing, and again, look, I don't want to be just going attacking the referee and all that. Dublin have reasons to be frustrated. And whatever about Henry Shefflin, Micheál Donoghue was equally not too happy. And yeah, those interviews are up on our website. But like Conor Whelan, two occasions just before halftime, isolated in three players. And, you know, I really felt myself there was one or two frees or penalties in it. But look, it's all up on our website, goibfm.ie. Just before I leave hurling, John, I just want a couple of things in football. Carlow Strand beat Macquillan 111-16 in the opening round of the local football leagues in Division 2. There's a full round of games next week. And news coming in, and two bits of news coming in. The Galway under 20 footballers, they begin their Connacht under 20 football championship campaign against Leitrim on Wednesday week, the 20th of March. That'll be in Duggan Park, Ballinasloe, at 7 o'clock. And what we heard there, the 11 o'clock news, in case you missed it, the Galway senior ladies footballers, they will host Waterford in Pearse Stadium next Sunday, St. Patrick's Day, at 3 o'clock. So a busy weekend in Galway, John, with all the action taking place.
Definitely. Now, moving on to Camogie. It was a good result for the tribeswomen, and it puts them right back on top of a very tight Division 1A.
Yeah, 6-point victory over Kilkenny, 112-9. The first half was very pedestrian stuff, it has to be said. But in the second half, Galway's leaders really stepped up to get the Aoife Donoghue, who got the goal. But defensively too, they just look very, very solid. And look, at the end of the day, John, Galway are going for three leagues in a row, but it's about finding players. And look, there's a few players not involved at the moment. We can tell you there's a few players on the way back, but Tommy Devan will update us on that in the next week or so. But Galway got the job done. They are joint top now of Division 1A of the Camogie League with Cork, Tipperary, who beat the All-Ireland champions Cork, and Waterford. Galway play Waterford in their next game in 2 weeks, so all to play for there at the top. But a great victory there for Galway too. The intermediates also the big win, they beat Wexford by 13-8, but no league final for them. They needed either Tipperary or Cork to lose their games. Cork had beaten Clare well, but Tipperary got a late draw against Kilkenny to get that 1 point to deny Galway's intermediates a Division 2B league final spot. That being said, it's been a very, very productive spring for Conor Dolan and his troops, and they'll be certainly ones to watch in the championship. Miners beaten 18-110 by Tipperary, early stages in that. One win, one loss. They'll host Cork in 2 weeks' time.
Yeah, in soccer then, Galway United and Drogheda United played out a nil-all draw in the Premier Division. I suppose, Darren, a disappointing result after the start that Galway had had.
Yeah, and I suppose it's a testament to the start that they've had, John, that it feels like a disappointing result, because look, at the end of the day, Galway would have come in as relegation candidates, but so far they're holding their own at the early stages. Only 5 games gone. They are sitting in 4th. Nil-nil draw. Again, Galway doing most of the football, but just not getting the punch of a goal. We'll take every point going at the moment. Next Friday night, Shamrock Rovers, the defending champions, in AMC Park. A game we can't wait for hearing over the line. Want to give a shout out, John, to the Galway United women. They got their women's Premier Division up and running. Goals from Jenna Slattery and Eve Dawson, giving them a 2-0 win away to Athlone Town. Joint top with Piemont and Bohemians. Great for them. Hard luck to Salt Hill Devon. They lost in the Connacht Women's Cup semi-final to Manila 2-1.
Elsewhere in soccer, Liverpool and Manchester City played out a 1-1 draw in the Premier League.
Yeah, being a Man United fan, I had to sit myself through this and watch it. But look, at the end of the day, they are 2 of the 3 title favourites at the moment. And again, a 1-1 draw. Liverpool got a penalty after John Stones got a well-worked training ground goal for Manchester City. And I don't think anybody can really argue about the result of that. With Arsenal winning their game as well, 1 point separates the top three. Arsenal on 64, Liverpool 64, Man City 63. John, we're going to be talking an awful lot of Premier League over the next few months, but it's one of the most exciting races in recent history. Tottenham Hotspur beating Aston Villa 4-0 makes the race for the 4th place spot in the Champions League also very interesting.
Now on to rugby and the Connacht Junior Cup semi-final. This is an all Galway affair, Darren. Great for the Galway teams.
Yeah, we got the results we were looking for, John. Dunmore, what a year John Dunmore are having. Yeah. Like, you know, because they wouldn't have been considered serious candidates for the Junior Cup at the start, and then they begin with beating the defending champions Westport. Now they've knocked off Buccaneers 36-5. They're into the final. Connemara would have been expected to be there or thereabouts. They beat Castlebar 31-17, so it's going to be a mighty occasion when you can say it's West against East in Galway or West against North, whatever way you want. Sunday week, the 24th of March, I think it's at 1:30 in the Dexcom Stadium. Dunmore against Connemara. We're really looking forward to that. John, that's the good news in rugby for the weekend. I have a feeling you're going to ask me about the other.
I'm still having nightmares about that drop goal.
So am I at the end of the day. What do I say? How much time do I have to say? Look, first things first, you have to give Marcus Smith, he's due, it's a fantastic kick to give England the victory as well. Ireland, look, You never rule out an England team, and I think an awful lot of the rugby fraternity nationally in particular were getting a bit carried away with themselves during the week. We never really got going to the game. Made a lot of mistakes in the set pieces. Two good tries from James Lowe. It looked like we'd done enough to get the job done, which is what big teams do. But England got the victory, so no back-to-back Grand Slams, a massive blow, because look how hard it is to win one. I think we've only got four in our history to get back-to-back. Yeah. Big opportunity. Ireland are still favourites to win the Six Nations Championship, of course. They take on Scotland next week, who are going for the Triple Crown, it should be pointed out as well. But heartbreak, and also the under-20s as well. What a pulsating match it was, a draw match. Neither England or Ireland get a Grand Slam, but England had that one extra point in the bank going into the final game of the under-20s.
Now on to show jumping, and Gort's Jessica Burke has kept herself in Olympic contention.
Yeah, she won the Fiji four-star Grand Prix in Express Trent over the weekend. Just three combinations jumped clear in the first round, and Burke went on to post the fastest of two double clears to take a winner's prize of just over €26,000. We're going to have a lot of Galwegians in the Olympics this year, John, and Jessica Burke is certainly in the conversation.
Definitely. In basketball, all four Galway teams suffered defeat this weekend.
Yeah, not to be for the Galway teams indeed, which goes Mary losing out there to Griffith College, and Macquillan going down to Temple Oak in the Men's Super League. The Mystics went down 83-49 to Liffey Celtics, and the Women and Titans beaten as well. But look, at the end of the day, they normally turn around. Big doubleheader next Saturday in the Kingfisher at 4:30, 7. University of Mystics at home in the Women's National League and our Super League, and Macquillan at home in the Men's. So basketball fans, get out to the Kingfisher next Saturday.
Now, finding golf, Shane Lowry finished in third place at the Arnold Palmer Invitational last night.
Yeah, it was a bit up and down, but two bogeys at the start of the final round knocked him out of contention. He finished third, 9 under par, 6 shots behind Scottie Scheffler. Rory McIlroy was flirting with contention there for a while, but faded down there too. But Shane Lowry in good form. He's up 17 places in the world rankings to 37th, John, so we'll keep an eye on him because it's only a month before we go to Augusta.
Brilliant, thanks Des, and you're bang on time as per usual. Just a few more comments coming in from Valerie Hughes' interview with me on Galway Greats. Sending love to Valerie, such a genuine person, wishing her all the best. Great interview with Valerie, a truly wonderful lady. That regards comes in from Agnes. And a great interview with Valerie this morning. What a lovely lady, wishing her all the best in life. All the best. That comes in from Larry. And finally, great interview with Valerie. Best wishes to her for the years ahead. And they keep on coming in this morning. But that's where we make our leave for the programme today. My thanks to Darren Kelly, who produced for me today. Fiona, who took your calls on reception. And I'm on the hot seat again tomorrow and for the rest of the week, and we're out in Salt Hill as well on Friday, so if you want to get involved in that, do ring into us in the station straight away. Coming up on the programme tomorrow, Derek Canning, he'll be joining me from pit stop to pole position. We'll be hearing about that and that app. And we also have the Gardaí slot, Eyewitnesses to War and Peace, the book by Eamon Malley. We'll be looking at that and all the different aspects to it and the conflict in Northern Ireland as well. We have trending topics. We also have Music Mornings, another event that's happening locally in the university as well. A quirky one that, so be staying tuned to the programme for that tomorrow. That's where we make our leave though. My thanks to Darren and Fiona and everyone who helped today. If you want to get involved, do email us straight away to comments@galwaybayfm.ie. Ronan Ardner is up next with the Livewire. Have a very good afternoon.